WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Kelly Knoyer. Thank you for joining us. We're doing something a little different this week, but I hope you'll bear with us. In February, One Christian Network held a forum on the housing crisis. The network is a coalition of Christian organizations that aim to work together to transform the city. To that end, organizers hosted a public panel to offer ideas and resources to religious organizations and religiously minded people. Topics ran the gamut from the existing crisis and the Christian call to solve it, to how to build accessory dwelling units, to how to support a tenant inside your own home. And we also heard from pastors about how churches can get directly involved in housing those in need. While this panel is aimed at people of the Christian faith, and there are elements of it focused on scripture, the ideas here can be taken in and applied by any community organization, family, or individual. As our panelists will explain, the housing crisis is multifaceted and requires the efforts of many people and institutions to solve, as well as many styles of solutions. We start off the panel with a word of prayer from Andy Jones, the interim CEO of WARM.
Let's pray. Holy God, your word tells us that wherever two or more are gathered in your name, there you are also. God, we are gathered in this place, members of the faith community, of one accord, in ways to listen and discuss and creatively think about ways that we can address the affordable housing solution. And so, God, we welcome you here to this place. Welcome in our midst. Lead us and guide us in our discussions. You know, we are so thankful for the ways that you love us, the ways that you bless us. May we, in turn, discover ways that we can bless others. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. By your presence tonight, you signify that you recognize that we are in a housing crisis. Maybe you're here tonight as an individual or a family wondering what is it that we can do on our own to address this issue. Maybe you're here as church leadership with a question about what can our church do? How might our church use the property that we have, be it land or building, or maybe some property that we want to buy? How might our church turn that into a solution to affordable housing? Whatever your motivation, we're glad that you're here. We hope that tonight you may be able to see yourself implementing one of the solutions that we'll hear about and that our panelists will share. I recognize that when we say affordable housing, that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And so let's start with some working definitions. Affordable housing, when you boil it down, really means that an individual, a family, can support themselves in the housing that they're in by spending no more than 30% of their income. Another term that gets thrown out there quite often is workforce housing. Sometimes they're used interchangeably, but there is a slight nuance and a slight difference. Workforce housing really addresses those families that have an income at a level of 60 to 120% of AMI that then can also live affordably, okay? So that's really kind of the difference. Affordable housing, big picture. Workforce housing, a smaller slice of that big picture. But ultimately, when you're talking about affordable housing, it really comes down to what is affordable for you, what is affordable for your family, at that 30% number. So that's kind of what we're talking about, sort of as a working definition of that. We're going to hear from folks tonight who are building accessory dwelling units or ADUs on their property. We'll hear stories of symbiotic and mutually beneficial relationships of folks that can, as a result of sharing a room in their home or inviting someone into their home as one way to address affordable housing. And finally, we're going to hear about ways that your church may leverage its property to provide a solution for the affordable housing crisis. In the affordable housing conversation, you'll hear the abbreviation AMI. I've already shared it a couple different times. That is the area median income. This is an official HUD number that comes out every year. It varies by county and family size, but that is a part of the definition of affordable housing as we're looking at the percentages that will come up later in the night. So I wanted to share that with you as well. This number is used to determine eligibility for available grant funding, tax credits, and other incentives for individuals and developers.
And here's a bit more contextualization. Currently, over 50% of renters in New Hanover County are housing burdened. That means they spend more than 30% of their income before taxes on rent. We're short thousands of units of housing needed to meet the need, both in rentals and in homes for sale. But it's particularly dire for lower-income residents. Out of 12,000 units of rental housing we'll need in the next decade, the county is short 8,200 for people making 80% or less of AMI. In Wilmington, that's equivalent to a single person making just over $50,000 a year, according to HUD. Once they're paying more than $1,263 in rent, they're cost burdened. And that's around Wilmington's average rent, according to the latest rental estimates from apartmentlist.com.
All right, the stage is set. But before we get into the details, let's pause and reflect why this is important and why this should be a concern of Christians and of the church. You may be familiar with the story from Matthew 25, where Jesus tells the parable of the sheep and the goats. Hear these words from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 25, verses 31 through 40. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on a throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate one from another, just as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep at his right hand and the goats at the left. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, and thirsty and gave you something to drink? When was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it to me." Now, before you say, "Andy, I didn't see anything about housing in what you just said," let me tell you that I don't think that Jesus was giving us an exhaustive list. I believe that Jesus was encouraging the original hearers and us to look for opportunities where we can address the needs of others. What better way is there to address the needs of others than to provide them with a place to live? I'm reminded of another parable where Jesus tells his audience, "To whom much is given, much will be required." Or maybe you can relate to the advice given to Peter Parker, Spider-Man, by his Uncle Ben. With great power comes great responsibility. The church is well positioned to move the needle on the affordable housing issue. The government can't do it alone. The nonprofit sector can't do it alone. The church can't do it alone. It will take all of us working together to find creative solutions. Tonight, we'll hear about some of those creative solutions. The housing crisis represents both a supply issue and a demand issue. I think that's why there's no simple solution. And the issue is so broad that no single strategy is going to provide all the answers. The solutions that we bring tonight represent short-term and long-term solutions. This is a both-and problem requiring both-and solutions.
Up next, we have a panel discussion on accessory dwelling units and how to build them on your own property. These are smaller buildings or additional homes built onto an existing property or into an existing house, and they're often rented to a friend, relative, or stranger to provide extra housing in existing neighborhoods and extra income to the homeowner. Melissa Sutton-Sang, a member of First Baptist Church, moderates the panel, and I'll let her introduce her guests.
My name is Melissa, and I'm here because this is my hometown, and I love it, and we're called to love our neighbors, and lots of our neighbors are struggling with housing. So my husband and I are trying to figure out if we can be one small part of the solution. We've been looking at building backyard housing, so that's what we're going to talk about. These are the experts, and I have lots of questions. This is Roger Gens, and among other things, he has a nonprofit called the Backyard Housing Group, and has been working on this issue for a while. And also, Suzanne Rogers has dedicated her whole career to housing issues and is currently at the Cape Fear Collective after working in housing with the city of Wilmington. So first, we're talking about backyard housing. There are a lot of terms that get thrown around that kind of mean the same thing or slightly different things. So can you tell us really quick about our terms? What are we talking about?
It could be a granny flat, or it could be a backyard cottage. And it's a very flexible model, and you can use it for a variety of uses. Most common use is for aging parents.
And what are some of the different types of ADUs? Does it have to be like a little tiny home in your backyard?
No, they break up the category into attached to the main house or a separate building. Each one has an advantage. If it's detached, you have some additional requirements on the building department, like separate sewer connections and electric connections, and it tends to be more expensive.
Who is allowed to build backyard housing? How do I find out if it's okay for me to do that?
Suzanne, maybe you can speak to this. Are there differences between what's allowed in the city and what's allowed in the county?
Yeah, thank you. There are differences because the city has its own land use ordinances and the county as well. But as Roger said, you could take advantage of his nonprofit to help you figure that out in the city or the county. Or you can also contact the city or the county's planning department and ask for assistance there. You know, just give them your address and ask if, you know, if you are allowed to have an accessory dwelling unit and what restrictions there might be. And someone there, you know, will work with you, help you out.
So I'm assuming there's lots of permits and things to just build a unit of housing in your backyard. Is that process difficult or expensive?
They're making it easier and easier. The city and the county are very motivated to increase the production of ADUs. It's great for them. They don't have to pay for extra infrastructure. They like the density. It creates more heterogeneous communities because HOAs, which don't allow ADUs, typically have one form of housing, and the kids can't afford to live there with their parents or the grandparents can't. So here creates an alternative type of housing in a neighborhood. So they love it. And besides, from an economic development point of view, the people doing it, the money, rent, is staying in the community. It's not a professional developer. So those resources stay with us.
So we've only got a couple of minutes left, but I'm convinced this sounds like an awesome thing to do. But it also sounds like it might be expensive. So what are some of the funding options? How would one go about paying for something like this?
Well, one funding option, if you're interested in having an ADU as part of your property and you want to have that housing available to someone who is low to moderate income, as Andy described, then the city has a program where you can borrow money up to $200,000 per unit at 0% interest. Now there are stipulations, and it is a loan, so you have to go through a loan process just like if you were, you know, getting it from a bank. They will look at credit. You know, you have to provide some documents, tax returns, bank statements, all that. And it is processed and underwritten like a loan, but 0%. There is a requirement that you rent to a low to moderate income person. And I think what's surprising to many of us, because maybe we have a connotation in our head of what a low or moderate income person is, but we're talking, as Andy talked about, someone who's earning 80% of the area median income, which would be someone who would qualify as a tenant in one of these properties, is someone earning $50,550. Anyone who makes that or less would be your prospective tenant, and that may be members of your family. So the terms of the loan, it's a 20-year loan. You have to keep it affordable for 20 years. So that's something to consider. You can amortize the loan for up to 30 years, so you make your repayments a little bit smaller. If you decide to sell your property before that term is up, there is a 10% penalty in the current guidelines. But if you think about the property appreciation and the fact that you're getting that money at no cost, that turns out to be a penalty to keep people from flipping, but probably not as prohibitive as you might think. The other thing I'll say about the city's program that's really important, if you are financing or trying to finance an ADU through a conventional mortgage, most likely what you're going to have to do is refinance your primary residence to take equity out to build it. And then, of course, we know with the interest rates nowadays, nobody would want to do that if you've got an existing 3 or 4% mortgage. So if you use the city's program, it's a second mortgage on your property, so you don't have to do that refi.
Gines and Rogers also answered a question from the audience about how exactly the faith community can help with the affordable housing crisis. Here's their answer.
I think that the role for the faith-based community in affordable housing is some of the things that were discussed, you know, bringing your resources to bear. And also, you know, part of affordable housing has to do, in my opinion, with a negative connotation, stereotypes around it. We refer sometimes to that as NIMBY, not in my backyard. You know, and people also need to know, especially your elected leaders, that you support affordable housing or that you understand that there's a need for it in our community. So to generally, you know, just share that you recognize it's important that there is an affordable housing crisis in our community and in the nation as a whole, and that you you want to be a part of solving it, and that you expect our community leaders to take it seriously and to help solve it as well by working together across all the different lines, like we've been talking about tonight, because there is no one magic silver bullet or one entity that's going to fix this. It is about partnerships.
Speaking specifically to the backyard cottage, there's an opportunity today, as a lot of things have been brought together. There's a huge emphasis by the local governments to try to encourage it. There are new programs every day. And what would be great is to create a groundswell, because right now the solution is trying to be pushed down by the professionals because they've come up with this. It is a really compelling model, especially if you think about your kids coming back to live with you or your parents. That's affordable. That makes that, it's not only the renter, it's bringing families together in a workable solution. So I just would ask, you know, people keep it in their minds as an alternative, and do some due diligence and figure out if it works. And there are a lot of great examples where it has.
That was panelist Roger Gines, who spoke alongside Susan Rogers for a housing crisis panel put on by One Christian Network in February. Coming up next, we'll hear from a panel of non-experts on how they helped with the housing crisis by allowing others to stay in their homes. I'm Kelly Knoyer, and you're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Kelly Knoyer. Thanks for listening. Today, we're hearing highlights from a panel put together by One Christian Network, a coalition of Christian organizations that aim to transform the city of Wilmington. The event was focused on how the religious community in Wilmington can help address the affordable housing crisis. The participants are Laura Bullock of Vigilant Hope, who guides the conversation, along with her husband, Corey Bullock, and guests Susan Shorts, Mackenzie Page, and Marissa McCabe.
So my name is Laura Bullock. I work with Vigilant Hope. I'm a member, maybe one of the 14 to 16 groups that came together, churches and organizations, to explore these things tonight. And so you'd heard from some incredible experts with lots of really good information. The first thing you need to know about this little chunk of the panel is that we are not experts at anything, okay? As I was preparing for our time together, I started to think about how every person in this room has a housing story. Whether you've thought about your housing story or not, whether you're aware of it, you have a housing story. And your housing story affects how you think about what home means. It affects how you think about what loving your neighbor means. You know, my housing story is kind of weird. I'm learning. I didn't realize it, honestly, until we started planning this event. But I've had some unique experiences. When I was in middle school, my parents got divorced, and it was kind of a dramatic, quick-moving moment. My mother and my brother and I needed to get out of our home kind of quickly, and our church family, the people who loved us well, actually invited us to move into an empty parsonage that they had to live, and we lived there for a year. And what that did, because a divorce can sometimes be something that pushes someone into poverty or exacerbates other challenges, is it gave my mom the chance to kind of catch her breath and get her feet under her. It gave her a chance to financially untangle from my father and to kind of figure out what she could do next. And it literally changed the trajectory of our lives economically and spiritually, because it showed me the love of Jesus. It showed me this character and nature of God, the way that they loved me. Somehow, I ended up a little bit later in my life, again, living on church property that was here in Wilmington. A local church invited me as a young adult to move into one of the houses that they owned that was empty with a couple of friends. And they said, we want to be present in our neighborhood and love our neighborhood. You obviously don't have any money or skills. Why don't you live in this neighborhood and be present, right? And so we exchanged. They actually didn't charge me rent for a season. They just said, hey, have potlucks, have meals at this house, live in the neighborhood and be present. I learned a lot about ministry and my call in that experience. So my housing story has shaped how I think about home and about housing. So what we're going to talk about tonight is you guys are all kind of adventuring in your housing story. You're having some new experiences. You're doing some things that are brave, some new things in your own lives. And so I'm going to start over here. Mackenzie and Susan, I want you guys to just tell us who you are. Maybe tell us just a little bit about your current housing story.
Yes. Well, I've been living in Wilmington for 5 years. Kind of a background is... In my earlier years, I had roommates, but for the last 46 years, I've lived by myself. I live in a three-bedroom, three-bath townhouse, and that did recently change, and we'll get into that. But
what about you, Mackenzie?
Hi. I'm Mackenzie. I'm 23. I work a couple jobs, and I'm in school full-time online. And the past year or so, I've been in a lot of different types of housing. In the beginning of last year, I had about three roommates, and then after that lease ended, I had an internship where my housing was provided, thankfully, through Vigilant Hope. And then after that, I had about 5 months where I wasn't really sure where I was going to live, but thankfully I had a community that listened to those cries for help and found some answers for me.
Yeah. So I don't want to give anything away, but these two were roommates for a minute, okay? I know you guys were seeing this was coming. So Susan, for some crazy reason, you invited Mackenzie to come live in your house. You lived by yourself for 40-some years?
Yeah.
And then you decided to explore this idea of opening your home. Why?
Yes, it really began with the church I go to had a, it's called Encounter the City, where you tour the city and really do learn more about, you know, the poverty in the city and just the needs of people, and also just to even they shared places where we come alongside of ministries that really help people in need. So that was a kind of an eye-opener, because I would go by places, drive by places, I didn't know that there were encampments in the woods. That it just really was an eye-opener. And then You led a, it's called Urban Intensive. It's a workshop where it's a biblical teaching of what poverty is and what poverty isn't. And of course, within that, you did talk about, you know, the housing crisis and the need. And I just felt the Lord placed on my heart. I have this 3-bedroom, 3-bath townhouse that I'm not using, just live with my dog. I really think that this is something I should pursue. So I mentioned that to you. And a few weeks later, an opportunity arose at church.
So you guys didn't, like, you had met, right, but you didn't know each other super well. Right. So this was a brave thing for you to do, to invite this beautiful young woman to come. And so this was a temporary setup, right? And if I remember correctly, this was kind of a chance to try it out.
Exactly.
And you knew you were going to have a place. Okay. So, cool. We're going to pause it here. We're going to get to know these folks, and then we'll get into the joys and the challenges of sharing space. So over here on this other couch, tell us a little about yourself. Give us your kind of recent housing story.
Sure. So my name is Corey, and I'm on staff at a church here in town. And I started out in a traditional 2-parent household. I lived in the same house my entire life until I moved away to college. Then in college, I lived with a couple roommates, and I married Laura. If you haven't figured that out yet, we're married. Yep. And your mom was going to have a series of surgeries, knee replacements, some pretty major back surgeries that was going to require assistance. And so a little less than a year into marriage, we decided to move across the state and move in with my mother-in-law, right? That's what everyone does when they get married. And so we did that with the expectation, thinking we'd be there for about a year. And we stayed. We lived with her mom to help her through that process for about 3 years. And then we always had hoped and planned to come back to Wilmington. So then we ended up back in Wilmington in 2014. And we bought a house that was affordable for us, but it was a fixer-upper. We knew there was a pipe that had burst in the kitchen. So the first 6 months, while we completely gutted the kitchen to renovate that, my parents, fortunately, had a house at Carolina Beach, and so they offered for us to live in that rent-free for those 6 months and commute back and forth to our jobs and while we renovated, and then moved into our house roughly 6 months later and have been there ever since.
And then we built an ADU in our backyard.
Sorry, I didn't
know
where we were going.
I talked to everybody but Corey about what we were going to talk about. Marissa, tell us about yourself and a little bit of your just recent housing story.
I'm Marissa. I did the normal college. I lived with roommates. I was lucky and I was able to live with the same two girls for my last 3 years of college. Then senior year of college, one of my roommates got married. So she moved out when our lease ended. And then my other roommate moved a little too far away than where I wanted to live. So then at this point, it was kind of just me. And then they had mentioned the idea of, you know, just what if dreaming, planning, what if we were to build this thing in our backyard, like, you know, would you live there? And I was like, heck yeah, I'd live there. Sign me up. But then I had this dilemma of, well, my lease ends in July, and this won't be done until the end of the year. Like, where am I going to find a 5-6 month lease that, you know, isn't, that's something I can afford? And so they gained a third roommate.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Newsroom from WHQR Public Media. We're hearing highlights from One Christian Network's event on housing affordability. That was Marissa McCabe. And speaking next is moderator Laura Bullock from Vigilant Hope, who invited Marissa to live in her house while they built an ADU to rent to her.
We ended up building an apartment. Honestly, my job keeps me in close proximity to people who just can't afford housing every day. So this has been on our heart for a long time. But as we watched you guys struggle to find like you just couldn't find something that you could afford as young working adults. Like, y'all both work multiple jobs. So we had this interim time where we all got to kind of experience. So you guys lived together. So here's the real thing. We're talking about opening our homes, which is weird, right? In like middle class wealth American culture, some of y'all are like, I can't believe you're even having this conversation. It's a little culturally weird. It's actually very normal in a lot of other cultures. It's normal in communities of lower income. But tell me about some of the benefits of sharing space. Like, what was good about your time together? Why are you glad that you have rented space to Mackenzie?
Well, first of all, because I am older, it was good for me to have somebody in my home, just in case maybe something happened to me. It was that security that, and just having somebody young around She wasn't around a lot because she has a busy life, but it was just a good experience, just having that young perspective in life, and yeah.
Mackenzie, what was beneficial for you about sharing a home with Susan?
There are a lot of benefits, but one is every day when I would come home from work or wherever I was, there was always someone there to greet me and really ask how my day was, and I just really appreciated that because it was a hard time for me. One part of that hard time was I went through a breakup, and it was horrible, and it was awful, and Susan was a big part of helping me through that just because of her life experiences and living alone, and she was just gave me some really great wisdom and advice, and so she really helped me through that hard time.
Awesome. And what were some of the challenges or costs of sharing space?
We've talked about this question, and we really can't come up with a lot of challenges.
Okay.
I think we're just meant to be. I don't know. Besties forever. I mean, there weren't a lot. Sometimes I would hog the dryer.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
I just throw your clothes on your bed. So.
Yeah, it really wasn't too bad.
I love that. So, Corey and Marissa, honesty time. We have not processed this together. What was great about living together? What did you enjoy? What was a blessing about sharing your space?
Y'all.
Whoa. I kept them young.
She did keep us young. But so, I mean, actually, you know, that sass, that's part of what is the blessing, is just the friendship that has developed out of it. We knew each other. We had, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or so, like ever since you came off to college. And so you'd been in our lives, and we thought we knew Marissa, but the what we really learned when she lived with us, there were so many good things. Like, you could think of the easy things, like, wow, someone else is cooking dinner. I don't have to think about dinner every single night of the week, that we're sharing meals together. Someone else is doing the dishes. There are the simple things like that. But there's also the surprising things, the fact that, like, oh, you know, we both like to watch football. And so, like, that gave us a sense of community on Sunday afternoon or something like that to, you know, just be able to hang out together and spend time in a relationship that might be a little atypical, you know, having someone live in your home that isn't, you know, part of your biological family or something, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. They kind of scooped me up my freshman year, so I kind of already had that four years of kind of just experience of being in their home with them. But I think it was good for me as a young 22-year-old that is also still just trying to figure out, like, my place in the world, but also just in this smaller part of my life in Wilmington, trying to figure out, like, where I fit in, and, like, just entering the job force is very difficult nowadays. And so I think it was helpful to be with people who are a little bit more established in the world and just kind of have that wisdom and that advice that maybe a 22-year-old roommate would not be able to offer.
And what was challenging about living with us, Marissa? Everyone
they
is
have
listening.
Cats. And I don't cats.
Our cats.
And I remember the first time y'all went away one weekend and I was just there by myself. They had an elderly cat. And she would make a lot of noises at night. And I remember I literally thought the house was getting broken into. And so I started, like, bloody murder screaming. And I came out, and it was literally just a cat. And I was so mad. And they came back, and I was like, I hate your cat. But we then developed a somewhat
you did.
Positive
you built relationship. A rapport. You built a rapport.
Yeah.
Corey, you're an introvert. I'm a roaring extrovert, which has been fun for you in the last 14 years. What was challenging for you, like, real time, real talk? People, like, if somebody's going to consider this, and especially if they're used to having their own space, what was challenging about that for you?
Well, yeah, so as she mentioned, I'm an introvert, and so that doesn't necessarily always come across in the large group settings or, you know, doing something like this, but what it comes across as is how I recharge. Like, I feel like I need to go home and that I need to unplug, I need to disconnect. And when someone else is living with you, you don't have that opportunity. So, you know, a challenge in that is there's a sacrifice so that someone else can benefit from it. And, like, that's hard. That's a hard thing to swallow. But I think as a whole, though, like, I would trade that again, you know, like, for what we had. Like, that was a good experience. Like, we would 100% invite Marissa to live with us again.
And yeah, so we're out of time, but I am going to kind of sum this up. So I know that, Susan, you've already said, like, this was a great trial experience, and your plan is to move forward with finding, like, a long-term housemate, essentially, to rent affordably to. So we have this neighbor relationship now, so we hang out still on a regular basis. We just go to their little cottage where there are no cats in the backyard, and they feed us. It's great, right? So it's not just about housing affordability. There's a beautiful potential that goes beyond just housing, which is a huge conversation, but there's deep community and fellowship, and the church is supposed to be known for that kind of radical love of neighbor. We haven't been doing the best at it, so we have some opportunity here. So thinking about next steps for this, so maybe you're going to build a backyard apartment or something. Maybe that's not an option for you. Maybe you have a little extra space in your home. Do you know somebody who might already be in your life that's dealing with housing insecurity? So, like, they were struggling with the we talked more about the relationship, but this was a real housing crisis at one point for them, not being able to figure out an affordable option. Do you know somebody that maybe, you know, I had a friend who lived for eight years in a home with a family because they wanted her to be a mentor to their daughters. And so they didn't know she was struggling to find housing, but she ended up being able to rent from them very affordably and also participated in the life of their family. So there's a lot of potential here. And if you don't know somebody, maybe you know somebody that knows somebody. Susan and Mackenzie didn't quite know each other, but they went to church together. So ask somebody in your congregation that knows the people. Hey, if I had this extra space, do you know somebody who might want to rent it? And we say the benefits far outweigh the costs.
That was Laura Bullock, the Director of Community Engagement at Vigilant Hope, hosting a panel discussion on leveraging your home to help with the affordability crisis in Wilmington. That panel is part of an event that was put on by One Christian Network that was held last month, and we'll hear more highlights after the break. I'm Kelly Knoyer. Stay with us. You're listening to The Newsroom from WHQR Public Media. I'm Kelly Knoyer. Today, we're listening to highlights from One Christian Network's event focused on how the Christian community can work together to help solve the housing crisis. The final panel is about how a faith community can leverage their church to provide badly needed housing to communities in need. Our guests are Reverend Jermaine Armour from St. Luke AME Zion Church and Reverend Ethan Welch from The Bridge Church. Armour is planning to use his church's property to create affordable housing for people with disabilities, and he's done smaller projects as well. Let's listen.
Hey, everybody. I'm Ethan Welch, a pastor of The Bridge Church, and I'm going to invite my good friend, Reverend Jermaine Armour, to join me as well. And this was a mistake, letting the preachers go at the end. Have we both been in the city for 10 years now, ministering?
I think I have you by a year. I've been 11, and so I'm one ahead of you.
And so I have the privilege to, we've actually both served on the One Christian Network board.
Yes.
And then it's been a blessing to be involved with the Charity to Change event that or initiative that's been happening over the last year or two. Mm-hmm. And when we talked about how do churches get involved with the housing crisis, Reverend Armour was at the top of the list. And they have been able to do some really creative things over the years with their property, with where they're located. And so we just want to talk about that. And if you are a church leader or pastor or minister or you just want to take this back to your church, there might be creative ways that you could actually use your church facility as a part of the solution for this. So you want to go ahead and jump right in to the first one? You say anything first?
Just to piggyback off of what you said, it kind of falls in line with our vision of rethinking ministry and our vision of partnership, and so partnership and another ship would be relationship. Listening to the last group that was here, I saw how the relationship formed and began. So that's what it's really all about. Ergo, my good friend Clifford Barnett, who always talk about us about relationships, and so. We started a while back with two houses that we have on our church property, and, you know, we were not using them for anything, and I thought to my congregation where we can use it to fix it up and make it affordable so that people can have somewhere to stay. So the relationship we had with Catholic Charities, and we spoke, and then she got Tommy Taylor involved with United Way. So now you have St. Luke, Catholic Charities, and United Way coming together, invested in retrofitting the house to get it together. And to this day, we have a tenant upstairs and a tenant downstairs. And because we are Christians and we love the Lord, and we wanted to make sure that it was affordable, and so we looked at what the rent was around our area, and whatever it was, we sliced it so that people could have somewhere to stay. So we started back then. And so now we have a new venture now.
How many years ago was the first house?
Oh, wow. Four, maybe. So it's been a minute.
Okay, so 4 years or so.
4 years.
And then there's another opportunity that you're in right in the middle of right now, pursuing.
Right.
That's in addition to the first one.
And yes, so, yes.
Tell us about that as well.
So this is another partnership and a relationship that is growing with Wesley Community Development, who I just came from Charlotte. I was hot coming down 74, so I can make it here. And we were on the meeting with Wesley.
What do you mean when you say hot?
When I was doing the speed limit. It was hot in the car.
Oh,
Ethan.
Okay.
Right. Don't make me push the envelope. Okay. I got my tie on today, sir. So this is Ethan. I've known him for 10 years.
We're in a pastor's group together,
yes,
as well.
So
I see another one of our brothers.
We got company, Ethan.
We pick at each other a little bit.
But
I'm the better preacher.
Yes, you are. Yes, sir. Yes, you are. I'm just a better person. But anyway. Don't start. See, we do this every month at Panera Bread. Come on, E. All right. So
the second house.
Yeah, the second house is a potential, and I'm saying potential because my trustees have agreed, and we have to present it to the church, my Methodist church. I know they're going to go for it, right? So it's this wonderful opportunity to where we have land, and the Wesley Community Development wants to build affordable housing on our land. For those who can't afford, primarily our elderly population, but watch this, also a population that has been overlooked and underserved, and that is adults who suffer from disabilities, that are too independent to live with their parents, but kind of not independent enough to live on their own. And so these little units will be technology-driven. I call them smart homes. They're connected to your phone. The community will be involved around our area to also watch out and assist them as well. And so that part is done through City Place, Susan Silver, who's the ED there. And we talked about the opportunity to build some affordable housing on our land that we're doing nothing with. It's just sitting there. We're going to build these units right there on our grounds. And we look forward to it. We have the sketches, they're beautiful. But how did we get there? Because it falls in line again with our vision of our church to rethink ministry and how we can go beyond the walls of the church and how we can affect the community. It goes along with partnership, right, to make our community better. And so we have the land. We're willing to allow them to use it. And I think it would definitely benefit all of us.
Yeah, in all seriousness, when I begin to there's so many things. I mean, your life is probably crazy, and being a pastor trying to figure it all out. I mean, it's just madness, most of the time. And then thinking about something else to take on, it's like, but one of the you didn't do this alone, and nobody has to do it alone. I mean, you've in our conversation, 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 5 or 6 organizations that have been a part of that. So you don't have to do it alone. I actually honor you for the way that you just build relationship and so many partnerships and organizations and other churches in our city that you just build relationship with. So I honor you for that. And then, so the partnership is key, but then let's talk about funding, because some, church is like, well, where are we going to get the money to do something? But there's creative opportunities out there.
Right. Yeah. So it was a little different from when we did it with our first idea of affordable housing with the house that we've had. We invested a little. Catholic Charities did. Tommy Taylor from United Way, and we got the ball rolling. On this one is a much bigger project. It is actually about 16 dwellings or homes that can house about 32 residents. So this is going to be major. And so our part is the land, right? They have the funding and they have the resources and the partnership and this great idea to put affordable housing in our city, but don't have a place to put it. And so the faith community now gets involved and say, hey, we have the land and we're not doing anything
right.
with it. So our investment becomes the land
right.
and their investment becomes the construction and then the long-term maintenance and the observation of it. So we do the land and
right.
they do the rest. And
right.
without them, we couldn't do it or benefit. And without us, they probably couldn't build.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect match.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate as well that there's funding out there, there's creative opportunities out there, but then it's a financial blessing in the long run for the church.
Yes.
The church is going to benefit for decades.
Yes.
I mean, long after you're gone.
Right, you know? Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. Like, we won't see it, you know, the end of this thing, but it's good because our churches need to be more involved in creating a legacy that will still bless the people. God always wanted the children of Israel to train and raise a generation of people who would serve him and
right.
magnify him. That it was about that, right? And so in the church, we have that same ideology of,
right.
of, I know we do, of making sure that the generations that are coming after us have the resources, have investment in the community, and we'll take it even further. And yes, we're talking about partnership and relationship, and we're talking about construction, and we're talking about affordable housing. But yes, on the bottom of that, there is a residuals that
yeah.
the church will be able to benefit from, and,
right.
and that's another appealing fact for
yeah.
us.
Which, this isn't in the notes, but you know, in the New Testament, I mean, based on my theology, we're called exiles, so... This isn't our forever home. We're exiles here. But then if you go back to Jeremiah 29, Jeremiah told the exiles, seek the good of the city.
Yeah.
Because when the city prospers, you'll prosper. You know, and so
yeah.
it's, I mean, we're loving, investing, and then it's, you know, it's just a
When the church gets involved in situations such as affordable housing, making... sharing spaces with others, we actually do a bit better than Jesus did. And Jesus wants us to do it because the Bible says he didn't have a place to lay his head. All right? He didn't have anywhere to sleep. So when we provide safe spaces for people, affordable places for people,
right.
the work that Warm does, making homes safer, when we do that, I think he wants us to do, because he did say, and greater things
right.
you should do. So I think it's right in line with the purpose.
Yes.
That was Pastor Jermaine Armour from St. Luke AME Zion Church, speaking at an event aimed at helping church communities get involved in solving the housing affordability crisis. It's worth noting that Armour isn't alone. Pastor Robert Campbell of New Beginning Christian Church has taken on affordable housing in a major way. He's become a low-income housing tax credit developer and broke ground on a 68-unit affordable housing complex for seniors last year. And he's working on a rezoning for a project aimed at working people right now. First Baptist Church has gotten involved too by hosting a day shelter for the homeless in its basement twice a week. And Grace United Methodist Church hosted a warming shelter for the unhoused during the coldest nights this winter. These are just a few more innovative ways church communities have gotten involved in helping with this problem. Thank you to One Christian Network director Emma Baltazor, who organized this event and graciously invited WHQR to record it and broadcast it for a wider audience. Church leaders interested in getting involved in solving the housing crisis can attend a follow-up event put on by One Christian Network on Tuesday, April 9th at 11:30 a.m. at the Roastery. There are more details about that event on the One Christian Network Facebook page. Thank you to the participants, Andy Jones, Melissa Sutton-Sang, Roger Gines, Suzanne Rogers, Laura Bullock, Susan Shorts, Mackenzie Page, Marissa McCabe, Corey Bullock, Reverend Ethan Welch, and Reverend Jermaine Armour. Our technical team is Ken Campbell and Mark Breedy. Our editor is Ben Schachman. If you missed part of the program, you can find it at whqr.org. You can also find it as a podcast pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts. If you have thoughts or comments on today's program or ideas for a future show, email us at newsroom@whqr.org. I'm Kelly Knoyer. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.